I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray. This is Shaka Hislop. And a little later on, we'll be hearing from Craig Burley and Nader Manua as we look ahead to week two in the Premier League. But we will start with the big news in La Liga today. Barcelona registering their players on the eve of their game against Rayo. That's six of their players, four of their new signings, and two of the players who have been renewing their contracts. Jules Koundé is still not registered. They will still have to free up some space on the wage bill to do that. But this is good news for the team on the eve of their game against Rayo Vallecano. Our whole team are actually in Barcelona ahead of that game. And we're now joined by Alexis Nunez. So, Alexis, this is good news for the Barca fans and especially for everybody who's going to be watching this game. Players registered. Tell us how they did it.
Yeah, Kay, it is absolutely massive news. And earlier today, we were invited to a tour of the newly renamed Spotify Camp Nou. And while we were there, there were a ton of people here on vacations, you know, and then all of a sudden, everyone was looking down at their phones and basically reading the breaking news that Barcelona had activated their fourth economic lever, selling 25% of Barca studios to a company called Orpheus Media here. And that would be enabling them to register the rest of the players, at least five of them that we saw there. The one that still hasn't been registered, as you mentioned, is Jules Koundé. But this just kind of made everybody super happy because, I mean, with all due respect to all the other players, the amount of Robert Lewandowski jerseys I saw today at the Camp Nou, it's clear who everybody wants to see tomorrow. And I think that's exactly who Barcelona were hoping to field tomorrow. But this is absolutely massive news because we all know that Barcelona have been stealing the headlines this summer, making these signings and hopefully building a team that can finally compete with Real Madrid. But honestly, it has been a very exciting day. And for those that, you know, may not know about Orpheus Media, they are another production house, and how they're hoping to give Barcelona revenue is the fact that they're going to try sell some things online digitally, as well as NFTs for those who know about that digital world. And then Jaume Roner, he was the manager, the CEO, the president of these two companies, and he gave an interview today after that news broke, and he said, look, all I know is I don't know what I can predict about Barcelona's team tomorrow, but what I can predict is that I have invested over 100 million euros in Barcelona right now. And he says he thinks that's enough to register all of the players. But the latest news that we are hearing as of now, everyone should be able to go, including the two in Roberto and Dembele, who have renewed their contract. But Jules Koundé is the only one that we may not be able to see tomorrow against Rayo Vallecano.
This is huge for Barcelona, isn't it, Xhaka? Because you wondered how it would be going into this first game of the season, but nearly all of them registered there.
It is. And looking at this, at that list, this is a really impressive Barcelona that will be taking the field and Xavi has at his disposal this season. The question for me will always be around the long-term impact on Barcelona as a football club, how it affects their revenue streams in years to come. But as a football fan, you don't generally look past what game is next or when next you may be playing against Real Madrid in the case of Barcelona fans. So you understand the excitement from within Catalonia around and with Barcelona fans. But still, just as someone who is separate from that, it feels manufactured. It feels almost dangerous in the sense of how football had been positioning itself for some time around fiscal responsibility.
I wonder, Alexis, what the fans think about this. Are they worried about the long-term implications, or are they happy to be living in the now? Because I know you've been speaking to some of them today.
Yeah, okay. We set out this morning pretty early to try and speak to as many fans as possible. And trust me, it was filled with a bunch of locals and a lot of tourists as well. The ticket line just to get stadium tickets just for the match tomorrow was absolutely long. So it was very, very heaving at the Camp Nou today. And I was trying to speak to a couple of them, fans that had flown all the way even from Mexico just to see this new and improved Barcelona. And the massive consensus is that none of them are really bothered with what's happening behind the scenes or what could happen in the future. I tried to ask them questions if it feels like Barcelona have almost sold their soul to the devil, because that was one of the headlines in the local newspapers here. Because that's, as Shaka said, it feels a bit manufactured. And if you're just quickly trying to find a solution now, could this come back and haunt you? But everyone said, look, we don't care. All we need to know is that we can compete with Real Madrid and we can get back to those glory days. And I compare the Barcelona and the vibe in the city now to what we felt last year when I landed here at this exact time. It was all doom and despair. Lionel Messi had left in tears. Everyone was protesting. You know, they were saying horrible things about the board and the administration. It was really doom and gloom for what the season, you know, would come. And then eventually nobody was really trusting in Ronald Koeman. We knew what happened to him after that, before Xavi came in. And you compare it to now, everyone is unbelievably excited. Last time I still saw a ton of Messi shirts. Now I've lost count of the amount of Robert Lewandowski shirts I saw today. And you know what I also saw? A lot of Frankie de Jong shirts. I'm not sure if people came in and just started buying them to hope that he would continue staying. We know that he is a massive, I suppose some people now view him as a massive asset to Barcelona. He has said that he does want to stay. We hear that there's interest, of course, from Chelsea now, on top of the interest from Manchester United. And now Barcelona may be looking still to sell him in order to fully get even more money to then further register Jules Koundé, who we don't doubt that they'll be able to register. But whether it happens next week or the week after, and whether now that is hinging on the sale of Frankie de Jong, is another story. But really and truly, the vibes in comparison to last year here in Catalonia is definitely very positive, and everybody just kind of wants to see Barcelona return to these glory days where they compete with Real Madrid. And it seems, at least for the fans, it doesn't matter what the cost is.
Oh, great stuff, Alexis. Well, there's a feeling of positivity and optimism in Barcelona right now. When it comes to odds to win in La Liga, they're just behind Real Madrid at this stage. But on the eve of the game, Barcelona's first game of the season against Rayo, Alexis managed to catch up with Ian Dark and Steve McManaman. They'll be on the call for it. Here's their thoughts on the season ahead.
Well, La Liga is back on ESPN. We cannot wait for this season. Steve McManaman and Ian Dark are joining me. Guys, how about this for a backdrop for a set?
Not bad at all. Did you choose this?
I chose it, of course. You know, I'm the boss around here. Well, you guys have been the bosses. Mac, I know you've played here many a times in Barcelona, of course, when you suited up for Real Madrid. But let's be honest, all the focus so far has been on Barcelona.
Yes.
That's the match we're here for as they go up against Rayo Vallecano. But it's because Barca, the money that they have spent that we didn't know they have to bring in names like Rafinha and Robert Lewandowski. I mean, it's been pretty much an exciting time for Barcelona, finally.
Yeah, at this time last year we were worried about Barcelona's finances, but they didn't have the team or the squad to challenge in La Liga. This year they have. They've still got the financial problems in this magic way of moving money around to buy players and
financial gymnastics, it's been called.
But at least they've got a squad that we can talk about now, and if they do get settled and La Liga starts, as it will do, we hope that the competition is a bit more feisty than it was last year when Real Madrid, you know, walked away with it and won very easily, don't they? But Barcelona, certainly with Koundé coming in as well, have got a better squad, a much better starting 11 as they did last year.
It's an incredible situation though, isn't it?
It really is.
I mean, somebody said this is a little bit like you lend a guy £20 and he says he can't pay you back, and then you find out that he's bought a Lamborghini, a mansion, and is going on around the world cruise. So, you know, exactly how Barcelona are doing this is open to question a little bit from a moral standpoint. But is it good for La Liga? You bet it's good for La Liga, because suddenly now Real Madrid have got a really proper challenge on their hands.
Exactly, massive challenge on their hands. But before we continue to preview the rest of the season, let's talk about the first match at hand, Barcelona against Rayo Vallecano. Normally on paper, this would be a David and Goliath clash, wouldn't it be, Maca? But with the ups and downs Barcelona have had, even with the signings that they've made, has the playing field kind of leveled out a bit for this one?
No, I don't think it has, because we'll have a relatively full crowd, won't we, tomorrow? It'll be warm, but it'll be in the evening. Barcelona will have a full strength squad. we presume, and also they've had a good pre-season, and some of the players have played really well. So you think that. Listen, it's going to be a difficult game for Rayo Vallecano, and it will be a lot closer than in previous years, but I still expect Barcelona to start the season well, like they did last year when there was question marks about them. But if you remember our first game last year, they were excellent. So I think they'll be exactly the same again tomorrow.
Darkie, how about this one for you?
Well, here's something. Rayo Vallecano beat Barcelona in both of the meetings last season, including towards the end of the season. They won 1-0 at the Camp Nou. They've got Radamel Falcao. He's not the player he used to be, but I think they've done a fantastic job. They were 12th last season. They got to the semi-finals of the Copa del Rey, and the coach has turned a lot of players who were lower division players into players who can perform in the middle of the table in the top flight. Whether they can do it again this year, that's pretty much open to question.
So what do you think tomorrow then?
I think Barcelona will. Lewandowski gets a hat-trick if he's cleared.
I know, we were doing predictions just yesterday, and Gemma Soler, a colleague, and I, we were very tempted to go 4-0 and even 6-0, I think I stuck my head out and went for it. But we know that Rayo Vallecano do like to play attacking style football. How do they approach this one? Because yes, Barcelona look good on paper, but still a lot of new people thrown in the mix, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they will gel as perfectly, right?
Yes,
and
I agree. And it's the first game of the season, and sometimes you see some strange results. And Rayo Vallecano will be quite confident going to Camp Nou, because they've won there last year and they played very well against them. So I think they'll go and have a go, because there are still weaknesses in Barcelona's squad. That goes without saying. I think they will improve as the season gets along, and as the players gel together. Because as we know, they've thrown five or six players in, a couple of free signings, a couple of big signings, of course. But they all still don't know each other's game really well. So Rayo Vallecano have got a really good chance. But we just think that in the end, class will tell.
I think Koundé is a great signing, don't you?
Massively
for Barcelona.
Good signing.
I really do. He's quick, sees where the fires are, puts them out. Wonderful signing. I think that's why Chelsea wanted him, but they didn't get him. Barcelona did. And he could make quite a big difference, I think.
So straightforward win, these boys are predicting for Barcelona over Rayo Vallecano. But in terms of the league right now, because that is it, I remember speaking to Xavi, I think when he just came into Barcelona last year, and they were still in the Champions League, still in the Supercopa de España, still in the Copa del Rey. And I asked him, you know, how do you prioritize all these things? And he didn't even bat an eyelash. He said, the league 100% is my priority. So now, are they true title contenders? Can they give your former club Real Madrid a massive run for their money?
No. But I'd say that even if they were excellent. No, they are closer. They are closer. But I still think, watching Madrid in the Supercopa a couple of days ago, with Madrid's new signings that are quite under the radar and quite sensible, I still think Real Madrid are the strongest team by far in La Liga. Yes, Barcelona have strengthened, but so have Madrid.
I think Barcelona are going to get a lot closer than 13 points, though, this time around. I mean, Lewandowski, you know, he's topped 40 goals in the season, I think, six or seven times. He's been the top scorer in the Bundesliga every season, just about. So, you know, this is a player who knows where the back of the net is. So he's going to be a big, big signing for Barca.
All right, well, exciting times for Barcelona, and they kick things off in La Liga against Rayo Vallecano. Make sure to catch that match. It's coming up on ABC, ESPN Plus, as well as ESPN Deportes.
Steve McManaman with his Real Madrid hat on there, and it looks as though you've got your Real Madrid hat on with your predictions this season, Xhaka.
I'm not sure I have the same hat as Steve, though. In all honesty, Barcelona are very close to Real Madrid. Just a couple of things that I remain concerned about. The chaos of the pre-season, of having to register players at the very last minute. As good a team as Barcelona promises to be, I just wonder if that continues to affect the dressing room. And then when you add that many new signings to a team, even when they are players of the quality that Barcelona have signed this summer, it just never seems to gel as seamlessly as you would think. The obvious competition is in Real Madrid, who are as calm and are as settled as ever, reigning European champions. And then we saw them in European Super Cup, Vinicius Jr. looks far more mature. Karim Benzema just continued where he left off. The one big question mark that probably hangs over Real Madrid more than Barcelona is that World Cup to come. How does that affect the likes of Karim Benzema? Barcelona will also be, every top club in European football will be, but you just wonder who it will have the greatest impact on. We've never had this issue before, so we're all just guessing as to how it will play out, how it will affect the teams this season.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Round two is upon us in the Premier League, and on Sunday, Stamford Bridge sets the stage for Chelsea against Spurs. Chelsea have lost just one of the last 32 league meetings at home with Spurs, and that included getting the better of them last season. As we just take a look at the odds for this one and welcome in Craig Burley and Nadim Anua as well. Despite all those stats, Craig, you are predicting a Spurs win this time around.
Yeah, I just think there's a different mentality there. They've had all their business done early. Obviously, there's still a lot of talk about Chelsea and potential for two or three transfers coming in. Tuchel's not quite satisfied with the squad. That's public knowledge. Tottenham, on the other hand, there's no rumours about them bringing anybody else in. They got their work done early. They got some money to spend. It kept Antonio Conte happy. They had a well-documented pre-season that we discussed on length in this show, and it was a tough, hard, no-nonsense pre-season, but that's the way the manager works. And they got a good start last week. Wasn't the greatest performance, but they managed to get four goals. And I know the record at Stamford Bridge, as you mentioned, is pretty awful, but I just get a feeling with this Tottenham team is that they've gone there scared in previous years. And even last year with Conte, it was, well, I don't quite think I've got enough. Well, he's got pretty much a player for every position now coming off the bench. They're strong, he has options. And I think there's been a sea change in the mentality within this Tottenham team. There's more of a belief. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we might see a bit of that early on at the weekend.
Do you agree with Craig's prediction, Nadim?
Well, I think Chelsea will be fine, but I think he's right in terms of talking about that mentality that Conte is bringing to Spurs. I think when we saw them play there last year, there were times when they looked really outplayed, looked like they could never catch up to how Chelsea were. But as they sort of developed through this preseason, you see the way that they're playing now, the confidence that they have. And, you know, the odds are one thing, but I think there's a sentiment that Spurs are ahead of Chelsea right now. So with that, they're going to arrive at the stadium and believe that they can get a result, you know, because why shouldn't they? They have great players. They have a manager who believes in them, the players who believe in themselves. You know, they've obviously run those 4-2 lengths in pre-season as well. So obviously nothing's going to stop them. But I get it. But then for me, I think Chelsea, for as much as they are losing players and they are still trying to be part of this almost like rebuild, you look at the starting 11 they can put out. And, you know, they've got some quality in there. You know, it's good for them to have people like Reece James and Chilwell back being fully fit, because I think a lot of the game revolves around them. So I believe that, you know, Chelsea will have enough. And when you sort of see the history behind it, you know, it does seem crazy that Chelsea have been so dominant over Spurs at Stamford Bridge. But, you know, I'm expecting something similar this weekend, unfortunately, regardless of the fact that Spurs are having their first true test in this sort of time where there's greater expectation upon them.
So it's a 1-1 draw for Nadum. Craig obviously going for the Tottenham win in this one. What about you, Shaka?
I've gone for Spurs win as well. I think now is the perfect time for Spurs to play Chelsea. Chelsea have had this kind of uncertain pre-season about them. They got a few, most notably Sterling in the summer, but then it's been hit and miss ever since that. And my greatest concern for them, I thought you saw play out real time against a very poor Everton team. Where are the goals going to come from? In the end, it took a penalty to break that deadlock. On the other side, though, I think Spurs trending in the right direction, certainly during the course of this calendar year. Conte with a full pre-season with this side. I think this is as good as you will get from Spurs. So those two things coming together, Spurs on the up and Chelsea still trying to find their way, I see Spurs going to Stamford Bridge and getting a win.
Well, when it came to the pre-season, go on, Craig.
No, I was going to say, I think there is a chance that, you know, Spurs are able to take a little bit more control in games this year. You know, Bentancur has bedded himself in. I think Bissouma is a terrific player. He probably won't start. He didn't start last weekend, but I think eventually it will be Bissouma in the side, and who he plays alongside him, we'll wait to see. But I think he's an excellent player. So I think they're able to get a little bit more control of the ball than previous games. And I think the difference between the sides, if Spurs can get the game right at the back defensively, and we know he's made some changes in that part of the team this summer, is Chelsea have a lack of a cutting edge. Obviously, Werner went back to Leipzig. He couldn't cut the mustard in England. Lukaku went back to Inter. He couldn't cut it last season. And they've got some talented players, but they really don't have any natural goal threat up front. Not to say they don't have a threat, but they don't have the natural goal threat that Spurs have. Even if Spurs were to take Harry Kane off and bring Richarlison on, that's still a huge threat. So the other side for Chelsea is, can Raheem Sterling produce the form of Man City? He's not playing with as good of players. He's not playing in a team that's going to dominate as much as Man City. So that's going to be a big ask in him to keep bringing those kind of stats to the table in what is a poorer team than he's been used to playing in. And so I just think from Tottenham's perspective, with the threat they've got up front, that there is a big chance for them to lay a marker down for the season here on Sunday.
We just saw Craig's pre-season predictions there. He doesn't have Chelsea making the top four this season. A reminder, Nadim, if you have them in the top four come the end of the season with your predictions.
Well, I've forgotten. You asked me a couple of weeks ago. You know, sometimes I move with the wind, you know, that sort of thing. But I think one thing about these predictions, it's the timing of it. You know, we look at Chelsea now and they don't feel like they've really got the momentum that, say, Spurs have. But if they sign a couple of key players between now and the end of this window, you know, we could see them in a completely different light. But unfortunately, because we've handed in our predictions already, you know, we could be made to look quite stupid. But that's, you know, that's football. That's what it is. So it goes.
Six, you've
in
got
that
them.
In that moment, that's just what it was. And then don't worry about Man United in fourth. We don't need to discuss that. But yeah, in that moment, it made sense. But yeah, so let's not worry too much about it. Obviously, you know, Chelsea want to be replacing for some of the players that they have. And when you look at the team, and I think Craig's right, they want to be successful, but do they have 80 goals in them to be able to be really competitive at the top of the Premier League in terms of the first two or three? As it stands, it doesn't feel like it, but maybe they've got a plan and maybe they'll bring in one, two players between now and the end of that window, which could give them that sense whereby they can go into any game and know they're going to win. And I meant to ask Craig a question as well. In regards to Spurs playing Chelsea this weekend at Stamford Bridge, is Conte going to take a front foot approach or is he going to go more defensive like he has done in some of the bigger games they played last season, would you think?
No, I don't think Nadum will. I think they have the ability to get on the front foot a little bit more, but a leopard, as they say, never changes his spots. And I don't think he'll veer too much away from that. I just think they have the ability to take a little bit more control. I think sometimes they ceded, and these bigger games, they ceded a lot of possession. I know they had some success at Manchester City last year doing that. But that was really against the odds. So I don't think he'll change too much, but he has the ability to make a change to their plan within the squad if he chooses to do so. And that's down to the players, as you can see, that they brought in over the summer. I mean, these are quality players that he can bring off the bench.
So we just heard Nadim talking about how things can change.
Go on. If somebody had a brain in this outfit, they'd ask us for our predictions after August transfer window.
What would that be? Listen, Nadim was just talking about living in the moment. So let's say that the likes of Aubameyang, a Frankie de Jong, a Wesley Fofana come in. Does that change your prediction? Will you then put Chelsea up in the top four?
If they get Aubameyang and a Frankie de Jong, I think, for me, my greatest concern around Chelsea remains around goals. And as much as we're talking about a team that finished third last season with two misfiring strikers who have now departed, so not really a whole lot of change there. I just think there's a more concerted effort from Spurs. I think Arsenal are much better than we saw them last season. At points last season, I thought not only would they finish fourth, I thought they had a chance of finishing third, but inexperience cost them. And I think that lack of direction in their transfer policy so far this summer ultimately will cost Chelsea, because Spurs and Arsenal, and I know we're only one game in, have looked like all they promised to be.
We are only
when
one.
When did you do those predictions, Hislop?
A couple of weeks ago,
yeah,
at some point.
He got. You got the benefit of a week gone, Craig, and then you got to make yours.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I think Shaq had copied me, but if he did them 2 weeks ago, I must have copied him.
Yeah, you've been on holiday for the last 3 weeks.
Which is rather worrying if I'm copying a goalie.
Listen, we've got to talk about Manchester United, because they faced Brentford this weekend. They didn't get off to the best of starts.
And Nadim has them in fourth.
Yeah, we'll pick him up on that, don't you worry. Now, one story today from ESPN sources is that Ten Hag has actually been playing up United's squad and their chances against the advice of the club, who reportedly want him to lower expectations given how poor last season was. Wonder what you make of this, Craig.
Well, I think expectations were lower after last week anyway. I mean, no matter what Eric Ten Hag says. It's a difficult one because, like, it's all talk. It's all talk at the end of the day. And the only thing that matters is what Manchester United do in transfer recruitment and on the field. And if last week was anything to go by, there's obviously a long way to go. Not that that was a big surprise, but just to say that one arrival and one new guy is not going to all of a sudden make them into a bit of magic. But it's unsurprising if this is true from the club, because this is a club hierarchy that have overseen this recruitment policy, and they've allowed these people, for the most part, to stay in charge. And so by doing that, they're pretty much saying, well, we're happy with what you've done, and you've made us some money in the business. You've made some poor choices in the recruitment, and we've spent a lot of money, but we're okay with that. And so behind the scenes, I think they're very happy with mediocrity. They may not say that publicly, but by their actions, they've been happy with what they've put out in the field. And so it's no surprise that he comes in with a much more positive attitude. And behind the scenes, they're saying, no, why not you just go out and tell people we're actually garbage? And I think from a new manager's perspective, let's be honest, if people have got Man United fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe some have got them seventh, I don't know, then for that club, that's with their amount of money, their standing on the world stage, that's garbage, absolute garbage. And so why wouldn't Eric Ten Hag be a bit more positive and try and get, a bit more enjoyment about the place? That's rather worrying for me, that the mindset of some behind the scenes at this football club. But I don't think to most it will come as a huge surprise.
People who may have them finishing fourth or in the top four come the end of the season, people like Nadim and Nua?
So my thought when I was putting these top six in was, like, some teams were down in Sharpie, but United were very much in a light pencil, so you can just erase it very quickly when things start going wrong. But what I will say with them, like, I hope this report isn't true because it is ridiculous in my opinion. I think that there are enough players at the club who know how good they are or how bad they are. So if somebody comes in and tries to sort of say you're something else, it's not going to work because you see it. But when a new manager comes in, the expectation is he's been brought in to try and make you better. So if somebody comes in and they try and dampen your expectations, well, what do they think the players expected after finishing sixth or wherever it was last year? Were they expecting to win the league this next year? Well, probably not. So what would the new manager say? He's got to come in. He's got to gauge what's good about the players, what's bad about the players, and create a strategy that tries to sort of bring out the best in them. So I think it's a funny sort of report because last I checked, you know, a manager can say you're good or say you're bad, but ultimately you're either good or you're bad, and you go out there and you show that week in, week out. So I think it did kind of miss the point, in my opinion. And at the end of the day, what's the harm in him saying to the players that they're good? Like, I've had some managers who said to players, you know, you're the best this, you're the best that. Like, one example was Sven-Göran Eriksson saying, so I think to Kasper Schmeichel, I think you're a really good goalkeeper. This is when he was at Man City. Kasper believed that he played, and now he's, you know, he's played 10, 11 years for Leicester. He's won a Premier League, won an FA Cup, and now he's playing in Nice. You know, that sort of thing. Positivity can help you a little bit. So if the report is true and they're upset that somebody's tried to be positive when they've come to the club, when they've hired him, they've headhunted him to come to the football club, I think missing a point would be an understatement. And ultimately for me, like I say, you know, just it's what new managers do. Try to be positive.
Can you imagine Erik ten Hag going to a press conference and going, can you believe somebody's paid 100 million for Jadon Sancho? Oh, Jesus. I've watched 18 months of Man United and Marcus Rashford ain't kicked a ball. He ain't kicked a ball. Oh, and I can't wait to get that Jesse Lingard out to Nottingham Forest. I mean, what kind of ridiculous stuff is... The amount of nonsense that's come out of this place in the last few years is quite scary. And, I don't know. I just worry for them this year. I'm sure Erik ten Hag will manage to get them moulded into something that's half decent. But their transfer recruitment, and we talked about it yesterday, the way they go about it is mind-bogglingly average.
Yeah, Craig, one thing I'd say is never worry about Man United. Like, they've spent a lot of time not worrying about anybody else. So they've had their success, you know. I'm sure they'll come back at some point. Let's not worry about them. But what I would say, the opposite, by the way, in terms of managers being enthusiastic, was I think it was 2012, and we had Harry Redknapp come in at QPR to replace Mark Hughes. And this was just after he'd been linked with the England job and all this. You know, he had a very big reputation. But when he arrived at the training ground, I've never seen somebody look so miserable in all my days. We'd be training, he's kicking the ground, shaking his head like, oh my God, you know, we were bad. But I thought, well, this wasn't the new manager bounce that I thought was coming. So, you know, I could say that also didn't work. So he pretty much made it clear that he didn't think we were any good. And lo and behold, we got relegated. So, you know, there's no harm in a bit of positivity because worst comes to worst. Maybe you can trick them into thinking that they're actually a great team, great club, and can be very successful.
That's right, Nathan. Blame the manager. Manchester United taking on Brentford this weekend then. How do you see this one going, Shaka? Because it looks as though maybe you picked it before Craig, but you've been copying him again.
No, I made this pick yet again before Craig, and I see this as being a draw. Listen, Brentford, who was so good last season, good at home, and I think this being their first home game of the season, you'll see a lot of that spark from last season again. And Manchester United, what can you say? After that opening day defeat at home, travelling to London, I just don't see how this team picks themselves up. Not right now, not just yet.
Is a draw going to be enough to stave off criticism for United, Craig?
I don't know about criticism. I think there's almost an acceptance that it's going to take some time, and there is no magic wand. And as Shaq was saying, you go down there to London, you know, second season syndrome maybe. Think about Sheffield United, their first season and then their second season. But Brentford, you know, that little stadium, they've got lots of energy, they've got a very good manager in Thomas Frank. And look, these United players are coming off the back of this bad start at home, and they've already shown in the last year or so that mentally they're not very strong, even in within games when they're in a good position and they lose a goal from being 1-0 up, they sort of buckle very quickly. Well, they've had a week to think about it. And if he's not managed to get his point across and they've not managed to clear their minds, then it's going to make for an opportunity for Brentford. And that's why I've gone for a draw. I think, you know, going to London and getting a point's not the worst. It's not what United should expect, but it's kind of where they are. And it would, at least it would be something. I think the criticism would come in the back page headlines if little old Brentford were to turn them over. And that would just make for a horrible start. I remember when I went to Celtic and we lost the first two games of the season. And had we lost the third, it would have been the worst start in the club's history. And that's pressure. So I don't know about United's starts over the period, but I do know they are under a little bit of pressure. They are fragile. And it's just time to stand up. And I'm not quite sure they've got enough to do that.
Why have you got them winning this one, Nadim?
Well, it's mainly because I just put Christian Eriksen in my funniest football team. don't worry about that. Let's not worry about the top four. That's old news. Yeah, but Eriksen's in my team this weekend. Thought he'd come back and do a little bit against his old side. But I think, you know, to put it into context in terms of how much things have changed, like, I'm obviously not the oldest person on planet Earth, but never in my lifetime did I think we'd be discussing it'd probably be a good result for Man United to go to Brentford in the Premier League and get a point. You know, that's how much things have changed. But I believe they'll get the result purely because I expect them, if they are to be the team that they want to be or hope to be, then they should react to like losing games at home against Brighton, who obviously did well. But you're travelling down to Brentford, you're not. Brentford are a good side, but they're not like setting world alight. You know, they're a good side. It'll be tough. It's their first home game. All that stuff. Tony's going to be pushing people about. It's going to be physical. It's going to be intense. That's great. But you're Man United. On paper, you have the better players. In theory, you have the better manager on the sideline. The expectation is higher, so you should be able to perform. And I think whatever the result is, you know, that will obviously be important, but there'll be a lot of eyes seeing the performance, because the fact is, you know, we claim this is a new season, but when they were 2-0 down on the weekend, a lot of people felt the same emotions they felt the year before, and they thought everything's the same again. So I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on them, and as a consequence, I think they'll perform quite well. I think they'll get the result, and I think Eriksen will get the winner.
I think Manchester United have to perform well. I don't think a draw staves off any criticism at all for Manchester United or indeed Ten Hag. And part of that reason is because what's to come? Manchester United's next league game is home to Liverpool. And to Nadim's point, never in my lifetime I thought we'd be talking about a Manchester United team losing at home to Brighton, somehow thinking a draw away to Brentford is a decent result, or let alone be three games into a Premier League season with 1 point. If they pick up 1 point against Brentford, and as we said, I do not think they beat Liverpool at home. We're talking about Manchester United, and here's the discussion we're having around Manchester United over what will be a couple of weeks. A United team that's got 1 point from three games, and the management telling the manager, don't set your sights too high with this team. I never thought in my lifetime those are discussions we'll be having around Manchester United.
Craig?
Okay. Well, it sounds a bit strange to say it. Results are important, of course they are, but you know, we know United are not going to be in a league title race. But there's a push for the top four, obviously, and it is important. But I think results don't just bring you longevity. I think it's important that Ten Hag sees the little things that he's doing on the training field, the things that he's telling the players, for them to take it on the park. Anybody can lose a game. Anybody can make a mistake and somebody scores a wonder goal. But I don't want to see United being outplayed by Brentford. I want to see the things that I didn't see from Ralph Rangnick. I want to see the changes. I want to see the pressing. I want to see the shape, the defending, the passing out from the back, the patterns of play. And if they don't get the result, but he's getting those things, that in some sense is a plus point. But if he's not getting the result and he's not getting those things, that's a worry, because we know Rangnick got no tune out of him. It looked no different. There was no pressing. There was nothing. And I think it's important, even this early on, that they go to Brentford and they puff their chests out and we see a bit of the Erik ten Hag team, even if it's not all his players and the players he wants. But we see a little mirror image of what he wants on the field. It might not be perfection, but it at least gives him something tangible to work on. And I think that is almost as important is the result at the weekend, that he has to see the stuff that he's working on from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, taken onto the field at the weekend. Because if he doesn't, that's a real head-scratcher for a coach.
Well, one thing that you are all agreeing on, and Shaka once again copying Craig with a 6-0 win.
I made this call first.
No!
I made this prediction first.
Right, Man City against Bournemouth. Go on, Craig.
I sent that in. Shaka.
Mm-hmm.
I sent that in this morning. 6-0 thinking, all right, bit of a doing. You've seen that.
No, I haven't.
You've got to have seen that.
I sent mine in before you, Craig. I'm sure of that. I was up before you.
I just feel having you weren't up before me.
I know.
You know, I'm a man. I walk my dogs at 5:30 in the morning and never see you up there. What? I looked at this one and I thought, Man City, brilliant team, obviously. Great start last week. Completely controlled the game. Perfect start for Haaland, in a sense. I think he'll get even more chances this week, obviously, being at home. Bournemouth had a good result, but, you know, it's just tough to go there. And as we used to say in the old days, chase the tango. Don't get a kick of the ball. You just don't get a kick. It's relentless. And I just don't see how Bournemouth are going to be able to cope with this City team. Even without Erling Haaland, and I think it could be a mauling, and that's why I went for 6-0. And that's why Shaka's copied me, and
well,
he's gone for 6-0.
I think more importantly, the former Man City player has gone against his team pretty much by not going for 6-0, Nadim. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
were you not impressed with Haaland last week?
Yeah, of course I was. Of course I was. But, like, they played against 11 other professionals, you know what I mean? But I get it. You know, I said that for the scoreline, but it doesn't necessarily represent the game itself. I can see City literally just dismantling them. It's a case of can they take their chances because they'll create a ton off them. But I just believe, you know, so early in the season, a team's been newly promoted or whatever, you know, they're going to be quiet. They're going to be committed. They're not going to be broken spirit-wise. And off the back of the fact that they won last week, there'll be this sort of, like, naive confidence to the way that they play. And they'll be believing in themselves, but, you know, obviously the main man up top is making these runs, is being fed. But I just don't predict that Bournemouth are going to be so open to the point whereby they just concede 6 and, you know, City have 20 good chances. So 3-1 to me being conservative, maybe Kiefer Moore scores a header since he's enormous. But, you know, aside from that, I think it's going to be a comfortable game for City, but I just can't see them scoring 6 goals, which I guess isn't the worst thing in the world, because if that's the standard, then they're going to be some tough weeks ahead.
You can't see them winning the league either, Nadim.
He's just trying to keep both halves of Manchester happy these days.
But he's not keeping Manchester City happy. He runner-up to Liverpool. Would you like to change your prediction of the Premier League title winners this season, Nadim?
Listen, Kay, for all people that know I'm associated to Manchester City, you know, I can either be right or I can be happy. So either way, it is what it is.
So was that one, is this City prediction in Sharpie as well? It seems all your picks are in light pencil somehow.
So light, Shaka. So light. No, with the City Liverpool thing, it just feels like it was a toss up between the two of them because they're so good. And whereas with City bringing in a couple of new players, I thought it might take them longer to adjust than say some of the Liverpool ones, because Liverpool did feel very, very similar, even though only one player's left and so on. Whereas for City, you're thinking, will he hit the ground running? Losing Sterling, he's been a fixture in the side for the last 5-6 years. You know, Jesus has been the same for the last 3-4 years. Zinchenko, you know, there's a lot of change at City. So I thought, given the fact that sometimes they're separated by a singular point, if Liverpool maybe start better than City, then maybe it's a harder chase for City. But, you know, as it looks right now, it seems like a bad take. But, you know, I can live with that.
Well, time will tell, and we'll be hearing more from these three guys on tonight's edition of Extra Time. Be sure to always stay up to date with everything that's going on in Extra Time by subscribing to our YouTube page. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Borussia Dortmund got themselves a comeback win against Freiburg on Friday night. Teenage wonder kids coming to the rescue for Terzic's men. And that is two wins to start the season for Borussia Dortmund as we now welcome in Archie Rintott. Teenage super subs to the rescue, Archie.
Yes, particularly Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, 17 years old, from England, and got in from Manchester City as well. You might remember hearing that before regarding Borussia Dortmund and a talented winger, namely Jadon Sancho. Of course, he was fortunate with that first goal. I feel sorry for Mark Flecken because Freiburg wouldn't have qualified for Europe without his outstanding performances last season. However, Bynoe-Gittens, as you saw there for the second goal as well, was very influential, binding two defenders to him and helping create the space for that second goal. And Edin Terzic, very complimentary of him after the game as well, saying how his first touch sparks things into life. He's an accelerator of the game and he is a game changer. So particularly how Donyell Malen had not been having a particularly good game. Dortmund hadn't been having a very good game. This is a huge result for them when they've not been playing well. And Freiburg is such a difficult place to go, namely for Dortmund in the past few seasons as well. They'd lost there twice in the past three seasons alone. And for them to go win there, and when their heads went down after that first goal and they started to look like the Dortmund of old from last season, you thought, hang on a minute. So this result, particularly after the situation they were in, is quite something.
Yeah, definitely, Archie. Does it give a bit of excitement to everybody watching the Bundesliga this season? Because, as you mentioned, it's not maybe been their best performances, but they've got those two wins. But it is early days, so there is time for it to get better for Dortmund and to click. Surely, this does make things a bit more interesting. I know it's early, but we could say that, couldn't we?
It does. I think they have a better coach in Edin Terzic than Marco Rosa. He fits the club better than Marco Rosa did, and he's able to get more out of these players, even if he's been backed more than Marco Rosa was. And let's not forget that the players that Dortmund had missing tonight as well, in Niklas Süle, Salih Özcan, Karim Adeyemi, Sebastian Haller, of course, as well for a very long period. Anthony Modeste signed and straight into the team. So there is something there for Dortmund to work on. And whilst the injuries at Dortmund is nothing new after what happened last season, they do have a lot more changes behind the scenes as well in terms of changes in the medical department, a new assistant coach in the form of Peter Hermann, who has been associated with a lot of German football success down the years, particularly at Bayern. I think things are going in the right direction for Borussia Dortmund, albeit I still have doubts about them at fullback position on both sides. You saw it with Rafael Guerrero. Sure, look, he's not the tallest guy. Him going up for a header against Matthias Ginter, him and Thorgan Hazard, two small guys against Matthias Ginter is not a healthy, and it's not going to be a healthy battle for them. But having seen Eder Militao of Real Madrid this week up close and personal and seeing just how he gnarls away at opponents who come at him, I think I'd want to see more of that from Dortmund defenders, that will to defend. And in that back line, I see that the most from Nico Schlotterbeck, and Mats Hummels, I thought, was caught out for that first goal in his positioning. So Hummels is going to be under pressure when Niklas Süle comes back in. So let's see. It's a positive start. I'll give you that.
And it's just one goal conceded in two games for them. So that's got to be a positive thing. So now it's the other way around from last weekend. It's over to you, Bayern. Bayern taking on Wolfsburg. What can we expect from this game?
Yeah, I think Bayern will very gladly take that baton given the way they've been playing. We know from Julian Nagelsmann's press conference that he's going to pick the same 11 that started against Eintracht Frankfurt last week, meaning that the likes of Matthijs de Ligt will have to wait for his first start in Bayern colours, as will Daily Gravenberch. And that's because Lucas Hernandez and Deo Upamecano at centre-back have been more concentrated, in the words of Julian Nagelsmann, have not been making the sorts of light errors that they were last season, which is very encouraging for Bayern. And Marcel Sabitzer, who had a disappointing campaign first season at Bayern, has really improved in place of Leon Goretzka. And then you come to what is happening up front with Sadio Mane, Serge Gnabry, Thomas Müller, and of course, the man of the moment. Man, he's still a teenager, Jamal Musiala, but he's pretty good, isn't he? So, look, Wolfsburg were not great against the ball against Werder Bremen, and they're going to have to do a lot more of that. There is a spicy storyline to this game in that Wolfsburg are now coached by Niko Kovac, former coach of Bayern, who left out Thomas Müller quite a bit towards the end of his tenure. And one thing that really stood out for me during that time was when Thomas Müller's wife posted on Instagram, "Oh, look, the coach has had a brainwave," when Thomas Müller was brought on at one point. So I think that there are some old scores to be settled there. Niko Kovac was fired only a few months after winning the double with Bayern as well. So, yeah, I think Thomas Müller will be fired up for this, but so too will Niko Kovac.
That's what we call stand by your man. OK, Eintracht Frankfurt did not have the best of starts against Bayern, and now things are going from bad to worse because Philippe Kostic is going to Juventus, Archie.
He is. I'm still actually in Helsinki, Kay, where the European Super Cup was played the other night. And walking by the train station, I saw a sticker with Eintracht Frankfurt lifting the Europa League trophy on it. And the guy that they have lifting the trophy on the sticker is not the captain, Sebastian Rode, it's Philip Kostic. That tells you about the legendary figure that he has in Frankfurt, not just because of his performances last season, albeit those were his crowning glory. Even I think clowning glory is something else. The way that he held up his number 10 shirt, Messi-esque, at the Camp Nou after scoring there. And just the way he got up and down that left side and terrorized defenses, not just last season, as I mentioned, in the Europa League run to the semifinals in 2019, he was superb as well. He leaves the club as a legend. We've heard tonight that they've signed Juventus's other left back, Luca Pellegrini, on loan for the season. So that's something to console themselves with this evening. Still, it does leave a hole in their team. And watching them against Real Madrid the other night, I saw at times the ghost of Philip Kostic running down that left-hand side, because, yeah, he's really had a special run at the club, particularly when, before that, he'd struggled in Stuttgart and Hamburg. So for him to go and do so well there was not on the cards at all.
OK, well, Archie, we'll let you get some rest and safe travels to you. Thanks so much, as always, for your insight to the Bundesliga. Plenty more of it coming across the weekend. Its home is here on ESPN Plus, building up to that game between Bayern Munich and Wolfsburg at 11:30 Eastern on Sunday.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Anyway, thank you so much for being with us on the latest edition of the show. It's been great to have you with us. Stick around, though. Extra Time is on the way next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Shaka, we have Craig, and we have Nadim. And Nadim, I will warn you that on last night's edition, Craig Burley was barking like a dog. And Gab also gave us an answer in a concise and short manner. So anything could happen on tonight's show. Yes, you had to see it.
Craig is just going to copy all my answers anyway.
But would you copy him barking like a dog?
No, I won't copy Craig barking like a dog. But all show long, he's been copying all my answers, I've come to realize.
No, that makes him a copycat.
Okay.
Meow.
Oh, good Lord.
Craig, first question is for you. Manchester United value Marcus Rashford at more than £120 million amid PSG interest. Could we get a Craig reaction / rant on this, please?
If Manchester United get £120 million for Marcus Rashford, they're maybe not as daft as they look. Not to say that he's not been a very good player. He's a talented player. He just hasn't played well for a long time. He's lost his confidence, and I'm sorry, but I just don't see that happening. I think it would be absolutely bonkers for any club to pay that amount of money for him at this moment in time. He's 24, he's going to be 25 in October, I believe, just after the start of the season, and he's going to have to prove himself that he can sort of restart his career. So no, that's big money for a guy that's not played well.
Nadim, on yesterday's show, Craig said that Rashford should get on the next Eurostar as quickly as possible and take them up on this offer. What did you make of it all?
That is an interesting one, because you look at the PSG thing and is he actually going to play? You know what I mean? He seems like he enjoys his home comforts in Manchester, supports Man United. Obviously, it's a bit of a shambles at the moment. But I think that's one of the things about when a team that's supposed to be good isn't doing well, you always have the belief that you could be the big reason why they come back. And I think when United do eventually rise again, you know, I think that will bring a lot of joy to a lot of people. And I think he's going to be one of them. But, you know, I don't think his French is that good from what I've heard. I do think his Mancunian accent's pretty good, so I don't know. I wouldn't jump on Eurostar just yet, but he might not have a choice, because if that £120 million comes in, I think they'll be strapping him in and saying, off you go, son. So we'll have to see about that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Shaka, which summer signing has surprised you the most?
I can't even think of what summer signings there have been.
Some of the Barcelona signings, maybe?
Well, we've not. Or just in terms of who signed?
Maybe,
or as opposed to performances so far, you mean?
Right, not performing. Oh, no. Oh, actually, you know what? No, I think it's as to who signed.
Right, who signed? I don't know. That's a good question. It's too early for me to say.
It's too early.
Who's pulled up trees in the first couple of weeks of the season?
But what? Okay.
No, let's not forget the question.
Let's forget that. Let's just think about just looking at the transfer market. What made you go, oh, wow, they've gone there?
Certainly, I never thought we'd be talking about Lewandowski leaving Bayern. If that's the angle around it, that kind of unraveled rather quickly towards the back end of last season. But I didn't see that. I didn't see that going that way at all. I'm trying to think more of the Barcelona signings, because they have been so busy in the transfer window. Outside of Aubameyang, which ones? I'm not that.
You know,
just,
could
put for God's sake, just give an answer and we can move on.
I can't think of any.
It's been put on the spot, hasn't it?
You can't think of any because you're a goalie.
All right, for Craig. After watching the impact Darwin Nunez has had against Fulham when he came on, should he be in the starting lineup for Liverpool against Crystal Palace?
Well, I didn't watch the impact that Darwin Nunez had against Fulham when he came on, because I was on vacation and I had...
For 3.5 weeks.
I rephrase that. I had time off and I had visitors, family here, so I didn't... I switched off, so I don't know. I think, yeah, if you bring in a... obviously had an impact, was it the Community Shield as well? So it was another game that I didn't see. But I think if I signed a player like him, I'll put it one way, I don't think City will be trying to bed, obviously, and they haven't, trying to bed Erling Haaland in slowly. And I don't really think Liverpool should be thinking about doing it with Darwin Nunez either, because even though it's early on, dropping a couple of points on the first day of the season is not ideal, because City are more than capable of putting a raft of wins together, and so you need to get him up to speed quickly and get him in the team, get his goals on the board, because that's what's going to win games. So yeah, I'm not sure about last week, but I would certainly get him in the team sooner rather than later.
All right, given that you know our pundits very well, having worked here a long time, I'm going to give this next one to you.
Okay.
Listening to Luis Garcia's La Liga predictions last night, start, bench and sell following ESPN FC pundits based on the level of bias towards their former club. So we're looking at start, bench or sell for the biased pundits among our team. Stevie and Liverpool, Frank and Chelsea, and Luis and anything apart from Madrid. Luis Garcia went for Barca winning the league, and Barca top player and player of the year, top scorer and player of the year.
Luis and Barca, most bias, so I don't know.
More than Stevie in Liverpool.
I think so. Stevie, Liverpool second, Frank and Chelsea come third. So I don't know how that falls into...
So you would start Luis Garcia in anything apart from Madrid. You would bench Stevie in Liverpool, and it's Frank and Chelsea.
Frank and Chelsea is the least biased of them.
Right, OK. Well, I know who's definitely least biased against Chelsea is Craig Burley.
Oh, goodness.
He doesn't need to say anything there. All right, Nadim, and I'll come to all of you on this. What are some of your favourite football souvenirs, jerseys, etc., that you own and are extremely special to you?
Souvenirs. I think, to be honest, the whole, say for example, changing shirts and stuff was a really good idea for like the first 4 or 5 years of my career. And then for the next 12, it's like, well, I've got too many shirts now, I don't know what to do with them. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's a thing. But the one that I really like the most, which is the most unexpected, is from my one season on loan at Sunderland where I came away with goal of the season. So that little trophy just to the side, like that's probably my best souvenir, I'd say. It was a nice little year, that one.
Oh, that's a nice answer, yeah. I like that. What about you, Craig?
Don't really have any. I've got my Scotland caps through in the room just next to me here in an old bin bag. I don't have any tops. I've got a couple of photos downstairs from playing in the cup finals and stuff, but my Scotland jersey was pinched from the World Cup in France 98. That was all framed. That was the one souvenir that I had, where the Scotland jersey with all the players had signed it, and all the Brazilian pennants and everything was inside it from that opening game in France 98, and that got stolen when my house was broken into in Nottingham 15, 20 years ago. So I haven't really had anything to replace it, so I'm not really sentimental that way. That was the one thing that I had that wasn't really of any monetary value to anybody, and it's gone.
They're two good picks, though. It's a shame that obviously Craig lost out with that shirt. But can you match those picks?
Yeah, well, I hope to. My answer is an easy one. So when Trantobago played in the New World Cup in 2006, we were sponsored by Adidas, who produced a boot, as it did for everybody, all the teams that they sponsored, in the team's colours, with a little map of the country, etc. So. They did a pair of red for Trinidad, and I got the entire squad to sign mine for me. So I have that. That's easily my favourite memento.
Very nice. Nice question as well. All right. Here's another bit of a sarcastic one, I think. We can establish that Craig's favourite person is Sebi. We're talking about people on the show. For Stevie, it's definitely Stuart Robson and Dan. Who's Nadim's favourite among the pundits? Which pretty much means probably who do you argue with?
Dan.
You get annoyed with the most.
Dan. He's always threatening to punch Dan. He's always threatening to punch Dan.
I know what you're doing, Dan. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, it would have to be Dan. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I think he's really good at his job, but he's also really, really annoying. And I think because I'm quite thick-skinned, I can deal with it. But, like, if he catches me on a bad day, I might have to fly over to Connecticut and go and say what's up. But, yeah, I think I'd have to say Dan overall. But he's a really good guy, though. I do like him, but I think he's the one.
Yeah. Would that be fair as well, Craig? Your favourite, Sebi? Lovely Sebi Salazar?
He loves a bit of football America as well, Craig.
He's desperate to go back on it.
Yeah, I mean, I got on well with Sebi, but it's just his hot takes. I can't be doing these hot takes.
And Shaka gets on well with everybody.
I get on well with everybody, Kay.
He's the glue on ESPN FC.
Is that? Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
But whoever Shaka's on with, it's always a happy camp.
I'm smiling.
Just a good guy. All right, thanks so much for sending your questions in. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Make sure that you do join us tomorrow.
Cucurella. ESPN. Cucurella is the most surprising signing. I've just decided.
Ah, Cucurella.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.